This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this edition of the program. Is the news media to blame for Donald Trump's slump in the polls? Is it really as biased as he asserts? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump's frequent chants of crooked media or lying media have grown louder and louder as his electoral prospects have become slimmer. Even though the record and character of Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton has been equally, if not more, scrutinized by the press during this presidential campaign, complaints about media coverage have emanated primarily from Donald Trump.
What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing. The New York Times actually wrote an article about it that they don't even care. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters. But unfortunately for them, I think the voters are seeing through it.
Donald J. Trump attacking the press during the final presidential debate. Donald Trump has never been a fan of journalists, but according to a recent article in the New York Times, he admitted to enjoying media attention, such as print or TV interviews, which he saw as free advertising for his new hotels and golf courses. During the Republican primary campaign, it is estimated that Donald Trump received nearly $2 billion in free media exposure. However, as his political fortunes have taken a negative turn, whether due to the Access Hollywood tape, in which he was found boasting about sexually assaulting women, or his refusal to release his tax returns, Mr. Trump has stepped up his attacks on the press. While criticism of the press is certainly legitimate, and media coverage warrants a serious discussion, it seems that Mr. Trump tends to confuse articles which are critical of him with libel or defamation of character. Some political observers say Mr. Trump tends to cry foul only when he is losing or receives negative coverage. Is the very integrity of the First Amendment, freedom of the press, under assault? What is the difference between legitimate criticism of the press and threatening First Amendment rights? With us to analyze the role of the media during campaign 2016 are two distinguished analysts. Frank Sesno is director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University. He's also professor of media and public affairs. He is an award-winning journalist. And Olivier Knox, he's chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News and co-host of Top Line, a Yahoo News ABC News original program. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
Hi, Carol.
Well, Frank Sesno, let me begin with you. First, let's talk about the media landscape here in the United States. It's very crowded, complicated. We have electronic media, network TV, cable TV, print, web publications, bloggers, social media. It's so different today than it used to be. There's mainstream media, there's more partisan media, obviously. So it's not a monolith, and we're not state-controlled like in China or Russia. But to the allegations of Donald Trump, is there any basis for his strident criticism of the media and its coverage of his campaign? How would you assess the media coverage overall?
Well, first, let me say I think it's very important what you just pointed out to talk about how big and deep and varied the media landscape really is, because people talk about the media. There is no the media. And that's the first thing that I think we need to establish, because to suggest that there is a conspiracy, to suggest that there's something like a 7 a.m. conference call when everybody from the media gets on it to figure out how they're going to determine how they're going to trash one candidate or another on a given day, that just doesn't happen. It never has. But politicians of all stripes over all time always talk about the media being out to get them, because frankly, that's what a free media does to some extent. It holds the powerful to account. That is a cornerstone of our media. Few politicians like it. To your question as to whether there's anything to Donald Trump's criticism, I may surprise you and say, yes, there actually is something. He's wrong about dishonest. It's not dishonest media, not big and broad when we talk about the population. He's wrong about corrupt, the idea that there is some kind of corruption which suggests a systematic misuse of the levers of power doesn't happen. He's right about a pylon. There is a pylon, and we've seen it very clearly over the last several months, actually, but certainly reaching a new height after the tapes that you mentioned were released. The media, the journalists in most news organizations, whether it's around that tape or around the other many factual inaccuracies that Donald Trump utters in debates and on stage in his speeches, have gone after him, as they should. But it certainly, to the candidate, will feel like a pile-on.
Same question to you, Olivier Knox.
Let me just take brief issue with something you said in your introduction, which is the idea that Donald Trump has never been a fan of the media. He's its biggest fan. He loves the media. He hugs the media tight and doesn't let go. He likes the media so much that back in the 1980s, he would call up reporters pretending to be his own spokesman to dish the dirt on himself. His candidacy was created in part by this relentless media coverage, by the amount of attention that we gave Donald Trump. So the idea that he doesn't like the media, I think, is incorrect. He is, however, on the business end of the media right now. And what's important here is he's on the business end at a time when he's competing in the general election. In a primary election, you cited the $2 billion of free media. It's a lot more complicated than that. If you go back and you look at the coverage of his campaign announcement when he came down that escalator and declared Mexicans rapists and criminals, although he supposed that some might be decent people, for the next 2 weeks, that's all we talked about was the Mexicans are rapists comment. It turns out that media scrutiny of that nature doesn't necessarily hurt you in a Republican primary. And he lurched from what would be, for any other candidate in any other year, from crisis to crisis. He disparaged the military service of Arizona Senator John McCain. That brought on a whole wave of media, oh, is this, is he finished? But in fact, he wasn't finished. His campaign through the primaries fed on this media attention. It's obviously clear that now in the general election, it's hurting him with general election voters. He still has a sizable majority of Republican voters with him. But he's within the margin of error in a lot of these battleground state polls. But what he's losing is some of the pivotal groups in the general election. So the nature of the media coverage that he's getting, I don't think has changed a ton. But what's changed is the audience for his one-man show.
There's one other thing that's changed dramatically, and he changed it. And that is the way he has set the agenda of so much of the media coverage. So he gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he tweets something. And then CNN sees that, and at 5 o'clock in the morning, they're all over it and repeating it. And then another newsroom in some other part of the country sees it, or a talk radio show host sees it, and it's out there. And so we have never had a candidate who has been this successful doing this kind of retail agenda setting, presumably in his pajamas, during a sleepless night, which is kind of a horrifying thought. But there he is. And that, too, is media. That, too, is media.
Indeed. Well, I mean, as Olivier said, he got so much coverage during the primaries, free coverage, so to speak, general election, you have a little bit of a different audience. But either way, he seems to drive ratings, that is, at least for electronic media. So let's talk about that particular factor. The media outlets like that. He drives ratings, which drive profits. You know, so to what extent did the media help, in a sense, to create the phenomenon?
I think the political cycle's I Wish I'd Never Said That award would go to a man by the name of Les Moonves from CBS, who said, Donald Trump is terrible for America, but great for CBS News because of our ratings. That's what he was referring to. And that is true at my alma mater, where I worked for 21 years, CNN. CNN has seen that Donald Trump and talk of Donald Trump has delivered huge, in some cases, unprecedented numbers, which brings with it huge bumps in advertising revenues. So sadly, although tellingly, so it's sadly tinged with telling, Trump has driven these ratings. It indicates a degree of public interest, too. Question is, and the challenge for journalism and for media is, what do you do with that interest? Do you pander to it? Do you provoke it? Do you take people in uncomfortable and difficult places? Do you examine issues? Or do you merely hover around the noise?
Well, that's a very good point, Olivia Knox, because some media critics are saying that they're hovering around the noise more than actually covering issues, elevating policy discussions, or elucidating the issues at hand. Others might say, well, Donald Trump, every time he tries to address the issues, then he turns around and starts to talk about lateral issues that then get covered.
Yeah, I mean, I think another way of putting this is, faced with this unprecedented public focus on a candidate, the question is whether you confuse transmission with coverage. And what I mean by that is, coverage of Donald Trump would be scrutiny of his actions, scrutiny of his record, scrutiny of his remarks, which Lord knows we've done a lot of. Transmission is you turn a camera on a podium, an empty podium, for an hour while you chew over fairly meaningless stuff. Then you broadcast the entire speech, and then you recapitulate what he said. And you don't subject it to scrutiny. And those are two very different approaches to Donald Trump. Going back, I know I sound like a broken record, but you can't just look at the quantity of coverage. That doesn't help you. Because a lot of the coverage, Yahoo News, a lot of our top stories in the last 15 months were investigative pieces, for example, about the lawsuits against his Trump University real estate venture. You can't just say it was X amount of coverage. You have to really look at the nature of the coverage. Was it pandering, as Frank said? Was it just transmitting what Donald Trump says uncritically? Or did it subject him to additional scrutiny? You know, we're testing a very interesting proposition in this cycle, which is what happens when someone with 100% name recognition and an entertainer, not a political brand, an entertainer brand, runs a completely unconventional campaign. I can barely call it a campaign because it lacks some of the basic features of one. To your question, I've never covered anyone less disciplined in my life than Donald Trump. So yeah, he comes out and he says, you know, now I'm going to give you a speech about my 100 days, my first 100 days in office, right? Important symbolic American idea, goes back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It's the incorrect idea that you're going to get most of what you're going to get done. You're going to get it done in your first 100 days as president. And in that speech, Donald Trump comes out and says, you know, oh, also, by the way, after the election, I'm suing all of the women who claimed that I sexually assaulted them. Well, as it happens, there's a lot more interest in that part of his past than there is on notional ideas of a potential legislative agenda. And so he steers the conversation back to things that are bad for him in a way that I've never seen before in my life.
I would agree with that. And I have to say that this is so interesting because conventional campaigns run by conventional campaign managers are built to feed conventional media. I covered many campaigns, and it was like, what's the news the candidate is going to make? So there's the stump speech, and they would leave, you know, two paragraphs that's going to be the news for the day. So candidate X has a new program for home ownership, and that's going to be the little news today, right? Because that feeds the media, and that's the headline they want. Or there's a particular attack line. They want to roll that out today, and for the next 3 days, it's going to be here, and then the surrogates are going to pick that up in the battleground states, and it echoes throughout. That has been 100% absent from Donald Trump, largely because he virtually has no surrogates. The only one he's really got out there is Mike Pence, his vice presidential running mate. And secondly, he's running a completely anti-media campaign, ironically, knowing full well that he's completely dominating the media coverage. It's crazy.
It is. Quickly before we go to a break, Frank Czesno, do you think there's any basis to Donald Trump's allegations that the mainstream press is in the camp of Hillary Clinton? Now, talking about 100% name recognition, she has it as well, but she is a politician par excellence and, of course, is running a much more conventional campaign. But what about that allegation?
It's false. It certainly may look that way to him from where he stands. Ask Hillary if she felt the mainstream media were in her pocket when she was locked in a campaign against Bernie Sanders. She has not gotten the amount of scrutiny that Donald Trump has because Donald Trump brings a different dimension to the campaign, largely what Olivia was saying. But plenty of conservatives have attacked the media for many, many years for being liberal. And it is true, and most surveys will show this, that there is a more left-leaning bent among most journalists. But ask Bill Clinton, when he was president, if he felt the media went easy on him. Ask Hillary Clinton if she thinks that the WikiLeaks and the other things are being ignored by the media because they like her and they're in her camp. It's not true.
Your take on that, Olivia Knox, whether or not the media is in Clinton's camp and softer on her than Donald Trump.
It would certainly be news to the Clinton camp. And Frank alluded to this too, but she's probably the most scrutinized and reported on political candidate we've had in history, going back to her days in the 1991-92 stretch of Bill Clinton's first presidential campaign. So no, we're not in the tank for Hillary Clinton. One of the interesting dynamics here is, you know, as Frank alluded to, what limited social science we have on reporters is that they lean left. And there is a, if you want to call it liberal, that's fine. The problem with that is when liberals come into contact with politicians who make all manner of compromises with liberalism, who turn out to be every bit as transactional as the most cynical businessmen, that doesn't yield good coverage for them. And so it's a little bit more complicated. You can't just say the liberals are backing Hillary because they're liberals.
We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Frank Czesno. He's director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University here in Washington. And Olivier Knox, from whom you just heard. He's chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castillo VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Ikra Iqbal. He's a loyal fan from Lahore, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Frank Czesno, to pick up on Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, news coverage of them. You know, some are saying both members of Congress, other politicians on the left and the right, Republican or Democrat, that Donald Trump in particular has gone beyond the pale, so to speak, in tone and substance. Many people believe that Hillary Clinton deserves scrutiny. She certainly has gotten it, in part thanks to Russian hacking of the Democratic National Committee's emails that were leaked by WikiLeaks, all of which, interestingly, Republican nominee Donald Trump has not only endorsed, but rather encouraged. In fact, he actually encouraged Russia, a foreign adversary, to engage in espionage against a political opponent, and yet he still doesn't acknowledge that Russia was behind the hack. So that's an interesting contradiction. But some do say that Donald Trump has gone beyond the pale. Expressions like lock her up, saying that he would jail Clinton if he were elected. His talk of so-called Second Amendment solutions. The Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. And then, of course, the coarse language that we heard in the infamous Access Hollywood tape. How do you see, you know, his language and his inflammatory rhetoric? And to what extent do you think it, in a sense, almost challenges the First Amendment? Because when it's reported on, then he says, well, I'm going to sue you for reporting on what I said. And this gets to the underlying issue of the First Amendment here in the United States.
Well, in one sense, he's a poster child for the First Amendment because he can say whatever he wants to say and get away with it. In a lot of other countries, you wouldn't get this far. And
but he doesn't seem to want to be held accountable once it's being reported upon.
Donald Trump is demonstrably and clinically thin-skinned. He is in the toughest business right now, right? Running for President of the United States. You're going to get beat up by everybody. It just goes with the territory. And there isn't an insult, virtually, that he cannot prevent himself from responding to in some fashion. New York Times did a very interesting thing the other day. The headline was, the 282 people, places, and things Donald Trump has insulted on Twitter, a complete list. And it's insults at presidential candidates, journalists, news organizations, other countries, and certainly the sitting president of the United States, in ways we've never heard. Donald Trump talks like a reality television trash talk star. He trashes other people, he belittles them, he name calls. We've had rough stuff in campaigns before, but we've never heard this. So that, too, is a challenge to the media. I'd add something even more important than the insults, Carol, and that is the factual inaccuracies that he repeatedly insists on bringing to his conversation. And Olivia, you're writing these stories. When you hear something like that, don't you say, I got to point out that that's wrong to my audience.
Yes.
And in a sense, that's a direct challenge to you, the reporter.
Yeah, I do like the idea of him as poster child for the First Amendment. I think that's a very good take.
He's a poster child, again, for the First Amendment. He can say
pretty
much anything he wants, and even if some consider this beyond the pale, whether it's the lock her up or Second Amendment solutions or the language in the Access Hollywood tape. But to the converse, so to what extent then is he willing to accept the consequences of that? It doesn't seem that he's willing to, because, of course, we saw this skit on Saturday Night Live recently where he says, I am so mad at the dishonest, lying media because they report what I say.
Sure, and he doesn't seem willing to accept it in several ways. One is, as Frank pointed out, he repeats the same falsehoods every time. I oppose the war in Iraq. Nope, there's no evidence for this. In fact, what limited evidence we have is that you supported it. I oppose the intervention in Libya. Nope, actually, what evidence we have is that you supported it. So in some ways, he disregards it. I have a whole long riff that I'm going to distill down to a very core essence. Social media was initially supposed to be this great democratizing force. It was supposed to allow what people called, rather pompously, citizen journalism. What it has actually done is it has given powerful institutions and people with built-in audiences platforms that they can use to counter the media. The Obama White House has built a de facto state-run digital media apparatus, enormously important, consequential for our democracy. And Donald Trump has the same sort of power. The number of news stories written off of his tweets this year is flabbergasting. But to get back to your point, no, he doesn't accept them. He encourages his followers at rallies to boo and threaten reporters. Some of his aides have anonymously threatened lawsuits that have never materialized against places like the New York Times. And, you know, this constant flood of rhetoric about how the media is somehow rigging the game, you know, he got here because of the media.
And Carol, I want to follow up on my comment there about him being the poster child for the First Amendment. He's a poster child for the First Amendment in the sense that he can say just about anything and get away with it, because that's his right, that's his freedom. He's not a poster child for the First Amendment in any way, shape, or form because of some of those things that he says. To say that he might not accept the result of the election is virtually unprecedented in modern times. We pride ourselves in this country on treasuring the ballot box. And while there are problems, there's never been any indication, any research, any suggestion that it's systemic or endemic. And to have a candidate say that goes against not the First Amendment, but certainly what we stand for. To say that he's going to tighten down on libel laws, for him to put media on blacklists, which he did during the campaign, and lock them out of events, to put them in pens at events even now, and then call them out in harsh, accusatory, hostile, even threatening language, that's the First Amendment that we pride ourselves on in this country, too. And we've never heard a candidate in modern times take it to this level. Even some of the things that Joe McCarthy did didn't quite go to this level. He did other very bad things. But this is unprecedented, and certainly unprecedented in modern times with a presidential candidate.
Indeed. And many journalists and others who respect the First Amendment are very concerned, Olivia Knox, about respect for the First Amendment, because as Frank Sesno said, Mr. Trump denounces the press at rallies, encourages supporters to rough up reporters. He has banned reporters, we know, newspapers like the Washington Post, whose coverage he does not like. Is it fair to say that Mr. Trump does not really have a healthy respect for the First Amendment, which permits the freedom of the press?
Yeah. So he bans the Washington Post from attending his rallies. Okay. This gets a fair amount of headlines. It was unprecedented. He phones up individual Washington Post reporters to give them exclusive interviews. This is the essence of the Donald Trump relationship with the media. It's not really a ban. He wants everything on his own terms. And the thing I'm grappling with is that he seems to want to win the argument in the moment. Consequences be damned.
And of course, he knows very well that the public at large has no love lost for the media, and he panders to that sentiment.
He is playing to the crowd here. Look, this isn't new. I have a treasured souvenir at home. It's a red cap, and it says, "Annoy the media, reelect Bush." And it's the first Bush. It was a hat I saved, I'll date myself, from the 1992 unsuccessful reelection campaign of George Herbert Walker Bush. But again, what Trump is doing is he's taking it to a new level, and he's very much playing to the crowd. You're right. And I think this is a much bigger issue and one that we should be concerned about long past November 8th, Election Day. The American public, like much of the publics around the world, are in an anti-institutional mood.
Very
they don't
point.
Trust experts, they don't trust their governments, and they do not trust their media. And so Donald Trump, like other candidates, get traction off of beating up on the media. His traction is tougher because he's driving a tractor and leaving everybody kind of grounded into the dirt.
One more question, follow-up to that. According to his litigation history, Mr. Trump has a record on punishing and silencing critics. So again, we're going that next step, threatening the First Amendment, which I think, as you said, has implications for the future. We read recently where the American Bar Association was actually afraid to publish a report which dubs Mr. Trump a libel bully for fear that he might attack them. So again, I think the concern is that what kind of effect this will have on journalists going forward, causing them to perhaps needlessly censor themselves, even though they're just doing their job, following good practices. This might have a chilling effect.
Yeah, and in fairness, let's just say that Donald Trump isn't the first. Barack Obama, the current administration, has been very anti-media and have gone after whistleblowers or reporters who have had access to whistleblowers, also in unprecedented ways. And so for Olivier and myself and others who have the misfortune of doing this for a living, but actually believe in what it stands for, because we believe that the public's right to information, good, bad, and otherwise, is a bedrock pillar of this democracy and of free societies, this becomes very, very worrying.
Frank Sesno, thank you very much for bringing the point up about Barack Obama. I think that's very valid. You get the last word, Olivier Knox.
I think fundamentally the press is going to survive this. Some outlets might be upset about the drop in revenue, but I don't think this is going to have a fundamentally long-term chilling effect on the media. The thing I worry about is this precipitous drop in trust in the media, coupled with this use of social media by the powerful, and add on top of that a number of new sites, groups of people who peddle just straight up false information that I see all over Facebook. Those three things worry me for the future of media, but I think fundamentally we're going to survive 2016.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Frank Sesno. He's director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University, and Olivier Knox, chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Encounter was produced here in Washington. Our engineer was Nashwan Kali. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.